I'm Alan Tu, editor for NewsWorks New Jersey website. Welcome to our podcast explainer series. It's a series done in partnership with NJ Spotlight, an online news organization that specializes on policy issues facing New Jersey. Today, drawing a line in the sand, how we protect our towns from coastal storms. Since nearly all of the state's 127 miles of coastline are pretty much developed, finding a way to keep the water in the ocean has become an economic necessity. But how do you keep the ocean from doing what it has always done, reshape the coastline at will? It's natural for some areas to lose sand, while others, like Wildwood, have a beach so wide that you can take a cab from the boardwalk to get out to the water. NJ Spotlight recently looked at the different approaches that towns are taking to protect themselves from coastal storms, and it turns out there are three common methods used to accomplish this, but they all have some downsides, and did we mention they're all kind of expensive? To tell us more about these three strategies, we've invited Scott Gurian, the Sandy reporter for NJ Spotlight. Scott, welcome back.
Thank you, Alan.
How do most oceanfront towns in New Jersey protect themselves from being, like, overrun by the big waves?
So there's three main methods I guess we'll speak about. One is beach replenishment, sometimes called beach nourishment, basically just adding sand to the beaches to make them wider, to provide a certain degree of protection. Another method is building sea walls out of rocks, concrete, steel, you know, various different substances they could build them out of. And the third is creating dunes, either natural dunes that already exist, man-made dunes, or man-made dunes that kind of mimic the natural dunes. That would help, you know, prevent the water from washing into the town. Just to be clear, these are all methods to protect, basically to protect coastal development, not to necessarily protect the beaches. In fact, in some instances, some of these methods can actually help erode the beaches faster. So they don't necessarily protect the beaches themselves, but they do protect coastal development.
Let's start with dunes. Dunes naturally occur on coastlines, but as you mentioned, most of the coastline is now developed. What is the strategy in building an effective dune?
Basically, the theory behind building a dune is that the dune serves as kind of a reservoir of sand that basically sacrifices itself when the waves come ashore during a big storm. And the sand dune absorbs some of the energy of the waves to kind of lessen their power and keep them from going into the town and damaging development. There's different types of dunes. So, as I mentioned, there's kind of natural dunes that are basically existed before any development took place along the shore. And these are just kind of row after row of kind of hills and valleys of natural, you know, sand covered by vegetation that grows that helps it, you know, helps prevent it from eroding as quickly. As you would have with a man-made dune, which is basically just taking a bulldozer and piling sand on the beach. And then there's a number of other factors, such as the size and the shape of the dune. Wider dunes are always, that's more important than actually how high the dune is. Even the type of sand that's used in the dune, people think all sand is equal, but it's actually not. You have to look at the grains of sand. There's a whole science behind this. And if the grains, for example, are too small, they might erode or blow away quicker. So every time scientists or engineers are planning on building a dune, they have to figure out where are we getting this sand from, and is it the right kind of sand to be most effective?
Now, what would be the drawbacks of using this? I mean, if these are effective, why not? Why doesn't everybody use them?
A lot of places do build dunes, and Governor Christie in New Jersey has this plan. He's working with the Army Corps of Engineers to build a line of dunes along the entire 127 miles of New Jersey's Atlantic coast ocean coastline. So it is a very common method. Though, of course, you know, like all forms of structural coastal protection, it's expensive. You've got to get the sand from somewhere. You've got to dredge it from usually, you know, they'll go about 2 miles offshore and dredge it from the bottom of the ocean. So that's a very complicated, expensive, timely process. And then they've got to bring it back to the beach and spread it there. And if they want to build natural dunes, that approach isn't being considered in many places because if you take a man-made dune and build it kind of to mimic a natural dune and plant vegetation, in the natural approach, you'd have more than just one kind of line of dunes. You'd have kind of several. You'd have the first line of defense and then the second one, and that's the way kind of dunes naturally evolve. And in order to have several rows of dunes, you'd basically need to you'd need a larger footprint. You'd need to knock out the first line of development along the coast. And with coastal, you know, real estate being as valuable as it is in New Jersey, and the fact that the coastline is already built up in so many places, that's many people are seeing that as not a viable option.
One of the things that you mentioned in your article is the use of seawalls. Now, I've seen the seawall up in Seabright, and it looked like a short castle wall. It was very fortified-looking rock and concrete. Why isn't this more common? I mean, it doesn't look like water's going to get through that.
Seawalls are probably the most expensive approach you could take. So there are walls in certain places. There's the wall in along Seabright and Monmouth Beach. Mantle Oaking and Brick, now they're considering building a kind of a steel wall along there after the breach of the you know, where the ocean met the bay during Sandy. They're afraid of that happening again, so they're actually building a steel wall there in Mantle Oaking. And this is probably the most expensive approach you could take. That's why many places aren't considering it. A wall would seem like the most surefire way for a community to protect itself from, you know, the ferocity of the ocean during a major storm. But there are, you know, drawbacks. One of the main ones that environmentalists and planners point out is that when the water from the ocean, when the waves come crashing against the wall, they have to go somewhere. Now, in the case of a dune, the sand naturally absorbs that energy. In the case of a hard structure like a wall, that energy needs to go somewhere. So it basically reflects back off the wall. It'll crash down into the water. So oftentimes a wall is responsible for eroding the beach even quicker, and you'll have really deep water next to the wall. Then the water, you know, those waves will crash against the wall. They need to go somewhere. So, you know, scientists say what happens is they actually run the length of the wall in both directions, and the wall's got to end somewhere unless you build a wall along the entire coast. When the waves get to the end of that wall, they'll be even stronger than they would have been, and they'll really, you know, affect the communities on either side. So, the wall's great for those who have it, but for those who don't on the sides, that's a real problem. And even for those who do have it, as I said, it could cause erosion faster. It's more expensive. And, you know, if you build, for example, in Mantle Oaking, they're building a steel wall, going to mound a giant sand dune on top of it. If a big storm comes, all that sand is going to erode away, and then you're just going to have this giant wall blocking off the community from the ocean. So walls are in some ways good at protecting the development, but really bad at protecting the actual beach and the natural environment.
The third method that you had pointed out was beach replenishment. I know when nor'easters come up, they sometimes can really erode a lot of sand from the beaches, and then they have to put it back. Is the incentive to do this more about tourism, or is it really does protect a community from storm waves?
Oh, I think it's both. Certainly, you know, the Jersey Shore wouldn't be the Jersey Shore without its, you know, its top attraction, its beaches. So certainly, you know, these communities, if they plan on having, you know, a tourism economy, they find that they need to replenish their beaches periodically every few years to replace the sand that naturally washes away from the constant erosion from the waves. But it's not just for tourism. You know, having having a wide beach does also provide a certain degree of protection from a storm. You look, for example, at Atlantic City. Though the back bay of, you know, that side of Atlantic City did experience a lot of flooding, the tourism, the tourist part of Atlantic City, where all the casinos and the boardwalk are, was actually spared for the most part because Atlantic City has such a wide beach. There is a public safety element to it as well.
One of the common sights I see along the New Jersey shore are these jetties that stick out. Do you know what the purpose of those are?
Yeah, the jetties, or sometimes they're called groins. They're actually, the purpose is to try to, you know, at least the theory is to try to keep the beach from eroding as quickly, and to weaken the power of the waves. But they really, you know, science has shown over the years that they really don't do as good of a job as people thought that they would. What ends up happening is you'll have the sand kind of wash off the shore, and it'll kind of pile up at the edge of the groin, to, you know, keep it from washing farther down shore. But then the sand right on the other side is you know, the beach is much narrower. So you have these beaches that are really wide at the one end and then really narrower at the next end every time there's another groin along the shore. So that's really, you know, the thinking nowadays is that that's really not a very good approach.
Scott Gurian is the Sandy Recovery Reporter for NJ Spotlight. Scott, thank you so much for helping us out on this.
Thank you, Alan.